You're listening to JimForAmerica.com, the radio show in progress.
This is our second half hour. This is Jim Condit Jr. for Congress in 2nd District. Voting is on Tuesday, May 3rd. I meant to say in the last hour that people on my show are only responsible for the comments they make. So Nick Fuentes is only responsible for his comments. Our next guest here, Christopher John Bjerknes, can only be held responsible for his comments, and they can't be held responsible for anybody else's comments or mine when they're a guest on this show. Last half hour was part of our interview with Nick Fuentes. This next half hour is about 20 minutes with the important author Christopher John Bjerknes on the Nazi-Zionist connection, how the top Nazis and top Zionist Jews worked together towards stealing Palestine for Israel. And that happened in 1948, 3 years after Hitler left the world state. Christopher John Bjerknes' interview also took an hour, and we edited it down to about 20 minutes, but this show and the entire interview with Christopher John Bjerknes will be on at JimForAmerica.com. And let's talk about the incredible. You were debating this guy using the name Wise. I can't remember his first name, but
Dennis Wise.
Dennis Wise. That he's using that name as a stage name, I think. And you debated him on Adam Green on the subject of his six-hour video, "The Greatest Story Never Told," which is an encomium of pure praise to Hitler. And you destroyed him in that debate. But the fact that I learned listening to it that I never heard before, tell us about the Jewish state by the founder.
Theodor Herzl.
Yeah, Theodor Herzl, the founder of modern Zionism in 1896. Tell us what is said in that book. It like predicts Hitler and Germany the way it became.
In that book, he said that anti-Semites would be the best friends of the Zionists and would help them to force Jews to emigrate to Palestine. And he said that there can be no peaceful coexistence between Jews and Gentiles, because when Jews become rich, they use the power of the purse to oppress Gentiles. And when Jews become poor, they become the revolutionary element, which imposes Bolshevism on the Gentiles. He didn't use the word Bolshevism because it didn't exist at that time, but he used the idea that the impoverished Jewish classes were revolutionary forces that were antagonistic to the Gentiles. And he said that the only possible resolution would be for separation and for the Jews to form a nation of their own. And then they could then cooperate with other nations. And he established a plan as to how to bring this about. And this is 1896, when Hitler was still a young child. He said that he would petition the anti-Semitic governments of Europe to set up trade companies, which would trade with the Zionists to make it profitable for them to expel Jews down to Palestine, and that they would utilize the funds of the emigrating Jews to pay for the entire enterprise, and then that would also benefit the Gentile societies, because they could then take the place of the Jewish professionals who had been essentially forcibly displaced to emigrate to Palestine. Now, when Hitler came to power in 1933, the Zionists approached him with what was called the Ha'avar Agreement, which is now known as the Transfer Agreement, which was exactly what Herzl had proposed in 1896, to transfer the Jews from the anti-Semitic state of Germany to Palestine. The wealth of the Jews would be appropriated by the German government. Some of it would be given back to the Jews once they had been transferred to Palestine. And Germany, which was under an international boycott and severe economic pressure, would then receive funds from these emigrating Jews to help finance Hitler and the struggling Nazi government. It was exactly what Herzl had proposed. And he proposed creating a friendship between anti-Semites and Zionists.
But he also said that didn't he also say that the motivation for the world to support the Jews having their own country in Israel would be to have an anti-Semitic leader of an anti-Semitic country, you know, cause the Jews to emigrate in one way or another to Palestine.
Absolutely, yes. That was the whole thrust of the book that he wrote and what he was proposing.
Okay,
was
so
that the anti-Semites would be the means by which the Zionists would force the Jewish masses to emigrate out of Europe down into Palestine.
Okay, so is it
And
fair?
He viewed that as a very good thing, as a very welcome thing.
Right.
Because Jews were beginning to assimilate with non-Jews, anti-Semitism was disappearing, and they were fearful that the Jewish race would miscegenate with Europeans and essentially disappear.
And Hitler, when he got into power, he shut down all the newspapers and I believe jailed all the Jewish newspapers and jailed all the Jewish editors of those papers except the Zionist paper, which was kept open and thriving. And really, the Zionist paper did not have much support because people, it's like somebody saying to me, do you want to go down and live in Antarctica? We got a really good thing going down there. I say, well, my family's here. I've lived here my whole life. Nobody was that eager to go down into the sands in the hot sand, you know, desert and fight the Muslims for the rest of their life or fight the Palestinians. So they weren't, Zionism, as I understand, was not going anywhere until Hitler started screaming anti-Semitism.
Absolutely, yes. And you touched on many vital issues there. It's true that the only political newspaper that was permitted in the totalitarian Nazi state was a Zionist newspaper.
You mean for Jews? You mean for Jews?
For any, there were no other political parties allowed to publish party organs except for the Zionist Jews.
Wow, okay.
And the Zionist Jews were the only ones allowed to fly a non-Nazi flag, their own Zionist flag. And they were permitted to have Zionist organizations and wear Zionist uniforms, which was also streng verboten for regular Germans. So they were privileged above regular German Gentiles.
Okay, now.
And what happened was World War I freed up Palestine through the Balfour Declaration for Jewish emigration. It also freed up the Jews of Eastern Europe who were trapped in the Pale of Settlement in the Russian Empire through the Soviet Union. Those Jews were then free to emigrate if they so choose. But very, very few chose to take advantage of that situation and go to Palestine. So the Zionist dreams were deflated and they thought that Zionism was dying. And they desperately needed to implement Herzl's plan to put anti-Semitic governments in power, to force those reluctant Jews to emigrate out of Europe and travel to Palestine. They wanted to incentivize the emigration. And the means that they utilized to incentivize emigration was to put Hitler in power and start screaming against the Jews.
Uh-huh. And there's a picture that we have published. I think it was from one of the Palestinian, not the Palestinian, but the Muslim organizations, call, and I can't remember the name of it now, but it was like Understanding the Truth About the Middle East. That was the gist of the title of the magazine. But they had a picture of a boat leaving Germany in like 1935. And on the boat, on the masthead was the, Nazi flag and then, you know, the swastika and so forth. And underneath that was the Israeli flag, you know, the Star of David and so forth on the same ship because they were going down to Palestine. And then Goebbels in 1935, I believe also, issued a coin that was Zionist on the one side and Nazism on the other.
Adolf Eichmann and, General von Mildenstein were both Zionists. Hennecke Gardell suggested that Eichmann was 100% Jewish. Eichmann, in his own statements throughout the course of the war and after the war, said that he was a committed Zionist. And Eichmann was sent down to help facilitate the cooperation of the transfer agreement between the German Nazis and the Palestinian Zionists. And Goebbels' newspaper, Der Angriff, published an article reporting on what Mildenstein was doing and that coin was issued in connection with that article to celebrate the idea that a Nazi was traveling to Palestine for the benefit of the Zionists.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the book you referred to just there, Cardell, was called Adolf Hitler, Founder of Israel, right?
Yes, and it was published in German, and there was an inadequate English translation of it published.
Yes, yes. And so that was, you know, that was the feeling of many people, that the key person in the founding of Israel was Adolf Hitler and his actions and so forth. And he totally supported the transfer agreement. As I recall, even in 1938, some of the German generals said, let's quit doing this. Let's quit helping to fund the Zionists in Palestine. And Hitler said, no, we're going to continue.
And the only thing that interfered with it was when they invaded Poland and instigated World War II in 1939, September of 1939. But mm-hmm. even after that, the Gestapo helped to facilitate the emigration of German Jews to Palestine. And they wanted German Jews especially because German Jews were highly educated professionals who could form the stock to create the new nation. Edwin Black, in his book, The Transfer Agreement, said that 60,000 sophisticated German Jews were brought to Palestine through the transfer agreement, and they were the ones who formed the backbone of the new nation.
Okay.
And provided the highly sophisticated, highly educated stock that was necessary to build the nation.
Yeah, and especially Jewish people that are listening, I would urge you to get the book Perfidy by Ben Hecht. Now, Ben Hecht was an assistant screenwriter on Gone with the Wind with David O. Selznick. In Farewell to Arms, the movie, Ben Hecht's name comes on the screen as big as the screen right before they get to the title, because he was a top Jewish screenwriter, and he raised a lot of money for the founding of Israel. But when he saw how the leaders of Israel were dealing with the Jews in captivity leading up to the founding of Israel after World War II, he wrote this book, Perfidy, about how horrible the Jewish leaders were acting. And I urge you to get that to see what Christopher and I are talking about, that everything did not, you know, it's proven in that book that the Nazis and the Zionists were cooperating hand in glove and even hiding that they were cooperating in many ways. And
it was worse than just cooperation. The Zionist leaders were coming to the Jewish masses of Hungary as if they were their friends and lying to them and telling them that they were simply going to be transported to new camps where they would be safe from the war conflict. And the Zionist Jews were encouraging the Jewish masses to load up on the cattle cars and go to the concentration camps.
Yeah, and that's where also Rabbi Moshe Schoenfeld, I believe, wrote Holocaust Victims Accused. And he was in his book saying how the Jewish police in Germany were helping Hitler round up the Jews. The Jewish police were helping round up the Jews and turn them over to the Nazis. So we have all
they
kinds of...
They were Sonderkommandos in the ghettos and in the concentration camps were all Jewish. Most of them were communists and Zionists.
Yes. And a lot of the information we have are Jewish individuals complaining that this was the state of affairs and their fellow Jews were helping Hitler to round up their parents and so on and so forth. We have a lot of sources in the videos at in the video and the audio that was turned into a YouTube video at HitlerDVD.com. If you want to research those, again, that's an anti-Hitler website because we named it HitlerDVD.com because it was easy to remember in the days of DVDs. So let's talk about Versailles, which set the stage. Now, so in other words, if everybody's following, if Hitler had not existed, they would have found somebody else to take Hitler's place. In other words, he was filling in the role that that was called for in the book, The Jewish State in 1896. Right? Do you agree with that? They would have found somebody else.
100%. And the they that you're referring to were the big Zionist Jews, the Jewish bankers who wanted to establish the state of Palestine. But they operated through the premier German general of World War I, General Erich Ludendorff. And he had an assistant named Captain Karl Meyer, who was involved in the German intelligence forces that took over Bavaria after the failed communist revolution that Hitler participated in. And Hitler participated in the Bavarian communist revolution as a communist.
Right.
He was a liaison to the soldiers' councils for the communist party, initially under the socialist Kurt Eisner, who conducted the Bavarian revolution. And then it became, when Eisner was assassinated, became the Bavarian Soviet Republic, which was led by a Jewish Leninist Bolshevik named Eugen Levine. And Douglas Reed was told that when Hitler was captured by the Freikorps, who liberated Germany from the, liberated Bavaria from this communist revolution, he was found together with Eugen Levine's bodyguard, that they were captured together, and that Hitler was that close to Eugen Levine, the Jewish Leninist communist dictator of Bavaria.
So this is about 1919, and Hitler is working with the communists, which had briefly taken over Munich. So that's a thing that the Hitler worshippers cannot explain. They never try to explain it. They just try to avoid discussion of it.
And Hitler hid the fact when he wrote Mein Kampf. But he did not hide the fact that he was recruited as an informant by Captain Karl Meyer and was put through instruction courses on how to become an anti-Semitic, anti-Bolshevik demagogue. And this was done because Erich Ludendorff wanted to create a German Joan of Arc who would create a national socialist revolution against the Weimar Republic, which was established after the Versailles Treaty. So Ludendorff ordered Captain Karl Meyer to order Adolf Hitler to infiltrate and take over Anton Drexler's German Workers' Party and turn it into the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And anybody who knows anything about communism and socialism knows that parties which call themselves workers' parties are communist parties.
Yeah. Now, since we got into it this far, let me mention to people something. I took every history course I could at St. Xavier High School, which was the 28th top high school in the country then based on SAT scores, and Xavier University. And I never heard this. Dr. Riznowski told me about it, and I had to look it up in the Encyclopedia Britannica to verify that it was true, because I couldn't believe I hadn't heard it. At the end of World War One, the communists, or the bankers behind the communists in Russia, said, let's just march right across Europe right now. Everybody's exhausted from the war. We'll take over all of Europe right now. And the Russians started marching, and of course they always have machine guns to the backs of the soldiers, so if they turn around they're going to get killed for sure. And they were marching, and they got stopped in Poland. It was kind of a semi-miracle, because they said the Poles were dealing with forks and hand instruments, and the Russians were better armed. But they put up such a fight that enough confusion broke out that the Russian soldiers shot all the people with machine guns on them and walked back to Russia. They didn't care about taking over Europe. So knowing that they were coming, though, the communists in Poland and Hungary, especially in Hungary, they took over Munich and I think another city. And when I did learn that in college, in high school, and I thought, I wonder why they just out of the blue took over Munich. And then they were eventually thrown out after the Russians were stopped. Well, the reason was they expected the Russians to march through Poland and be in Hungary within a few weeks. And they were then going to have already control of Munich, and they were going to be ready to be the rulers of Hungary. Well, when the Russians were stopped and turned around and went home, then, of course, they were overthrown. And that explains, and in that period, that's where Hitler was working with the communists. And there's no explanation for this, except that Hitler was a guy looking for his spot in the sky, you know, his destiny. He wanted to be somebody important. And he thought at that time it was best to work with the communists. But then afterwards, when the communists were overthrown, for some reason Hitler was kind of let go, and he then became started to become the leader of the Nazis. And when in the book The Prisoner of Ottawa, where Douglas Reed was interviewing
Otto Strasser.
Okay, so when Douglas Reed was interviewing Otto Strasser, who was banished to Canada and had been a competitor of Hitler's in Germany, when they were talking about Hitler when he was on the rise in the 20s to be head of the Nazi Party, why he was working with the communists in Munich in 1919 or so, he was saying they would talk about that in the 20s. Why was Adolf working with the communists in Munich, and they would just kind of shrug their shoulders and go on, you know? And David Irving is on BitChute, one of the little clips of him, and he's sympathetic to Hitler in many ways, but he said when he was, that he had found that when the Nazi Party was on the rise in the 20s, they were heavily funded and essentially funded by two bankers in Berlin. And he said, I don't want to say what religion those bankers were because I don't want to be accused of anti-Semitism. So
he had found proof of that, actually, in a letter from the German Chancellor Brüning to Winston Churchill.
Yes, yes.
And in that letter, Brüning, who was Chancellor of Germany and strongly anti-Nazi, said that the two biggest funders of the Nazi Party were Jewish, and one of them was the leader of Zionism in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, that's on BitChute still. And thank you for reminding me of that. And Churchill even wanted to include that in his 6-volume set that it was published by, I think, Simon & Schuster. And Simon & Schuster vetoed it and said it could not go in the book.
Yes, they suppressed it.
Yeah, so Churchill occasionally would have a moment of clarity. But okay, so that's my show, 20 minutes of the show with Christopher John Bjerknes. This whole show and his whole hour interview will be up at jimforamerica.com. By the way, Christopher John Bjerknes is 1/4 Jewish on his dad's side, grandfather from Sweden, but he thinks it's a matter of integrity to expose criminals everywhere. Like I, as a Catholic, believe it's critical to expose the agents of the counterfeit church that's been occupying the Vatican and the entire structures of the Catholic Church since 1958 in what Our Lady of La Salette in 1846 called the Eclipse of the Church. Christopher's 4 books on Adolf Hitler, one on Adolf Hitler communism, Zionism, World War I, and World War II is coming, can be found at cjbbooks.com. That's Charlie James Boy Books.com. By the way, iHeart WLW WKRC started persecuting me on my ads this Thursday, ruining all of my primetime ads, or just taking them out of the and pushing back past 6 p.m. and so forth. I don't even have time to gripe about this, but they consistently do this to me every year since 2002, and they only do it to me, but I don't have time to go into it any further than that. We haven't had time to talk much about the phony food shortages that the criminal Jews behind Joe Biden are announcing are going to happen. Any food shortage is totally artificial. We live in an age of plenty, and we better arrest these damn Jews in power quickly before our children are going hungry. I just attended a live event with Dr. Brian Ardis, A-R-D-I-S. He says that the COVID vaccine was deliberately a poison from snake venom. So look up Dr. Ardis, A-R-D-I-S, COVID, snake venom, and he also tells you what to do about it if you've mistakenly taken Fauci's poison vaccine. On the most important subject of the takeover of the structures of the Vatican through the hijacking of the 1958 conclave and the installation of John the 23rd and all since anti-popes in the Vatican, go to whitesmoke1958.com. Whitesmoke1958.com. This concerns everybody, but Catholics will be especially want to look at that site, which explains what happened to the church. We're in the eclipse of the church, predicted by Our Lady of La Salette. The church will rise again, but the timing is probably near, but It's hard to say. Go to jimforamerica.com and get the solutions of the precincts, how we overthrow the party leaders peacefully and constitutionally and replace them in the Congress, the major party leaders, and what we must demand, and only this for the vote count. Paper ballots, which 90% of the country already has, paper ballots counted by hand, by people, before the ballots leave the public site. Before they leave the public site, computers must be banned, same-day voting, no mail-in voting, which is illegal by 3 Supreme Court decisions. And you can learn everything you need to know about a vote fraud at jimforamerica.com and by watching the YouTube video, My Encounter with Trump on Computer Election Fraud, which is a 51-minute 2018 a year radio show that will tell you everything you need to know about how our vote count was conspiratorially stolen and how we can easily replace it by the solution I just said. No one, not even Catholics, have to believe private prophecies, but St. Paul says, despise not prophecy. And when you have many prophecies from many scholars and saints and holy people from many countries, many centuries, and many different times, then we maybe should not totally ignore them. And there's a very hopeful, great body of prophecies that suggest that we are in the end of a chastisement of mankind over the last 100 years. It will end in 3 days of darkness through the a comet tail passing through the atmosphere of the earth for 3 days. And that after that, we'll have the peace of Fatima, the peace of Mary for a generation to 500 years, and then will be the end of the world. So we may only be 8 to 15 years away from the 3 days of darkness and the good guys again ruling the earth for a generation to 500 years. So I am very hopeful that that will be the case, but I just thought I'd mention it because I get up every morning happy knowing we're going to win this one way or the other. 1600 years ago, Saint Benedict said when he founded the first monastery, Ora et Labora, pray and work. So in addition to our actions and working, we should be all praying 2 Chronicles chapter 7, that if we repent, God will heal our land. And if you add in the Book of Maccabees, the rosary is totally scriptural. So not only Catholics, but Protestants, non-Catholics, should look at saying the rosary daily. This is Jim Conda Jr. for Congress. Election Day is May 3rd, 2022. Go to jimforamerica.com for our information. More information will be added. And I thank you for listening these 4 weeks.